Okay, thank you. May I? So, thanks the organizer for the invitation. The previous speaker talked about the averaging lemma. That's what I would like to concentrate in this lecture. The relation between kinetic formulation, regularizing effect, and the averaging lemma. This is the outline of the talk for the 1 hour talk. This is a half an hour talk, so I will talk twice as fast. Let's start with hyperbolic equations, the linear case. In the linear case, and this is the simple model, the scalar model, basically what we have is just translation. So in the translation case, the two most important things are that the solution is as smooth as the data, no more, no less in the hyperbolic case, and that the solution operator is reversible in time. Forward and backward in time are the same. This is in sharp contrast to the nonlinear case. Here's the scalar nonlinear case. Now the speed depends on rho, and this is the initial profile, rho naught. The solution still propagates along the characteristics. What you see here is the distribution of the characteristics. They are straight characteristics. However, the slope changes depending on the initial position. And this is my drawing of how things either focus when we approaching shock or they spread when we have a reflection. And this is the kind of nonlinearity. In 1D, all we have is just focusing and reflection. And due to that, the solution becomes, in fact, smoother. There is a smoothing effect in the nonlinear case, and it is intimately related to the fact that the solution operator is irreversible in time. And let's see it in analytical terms. If this is our nonlinear equation, this is purely 1D effect, I will denote by capital letter the primitive of a smaller case letter. So capital A is the flux, and the local speed is little a. And the notion of nonlinearity in this case is very simple to see. This is the argument that goes back, I believe, to Gleim. Let's assume that the flux is nonlinear in the sense that the derivative of the speed is positive, that is, the flux is convex. Well, you have the straight characteristics. Here are two of them. Here is the value rho 1 at the point x1. This is the x, t space. So we have a value rho 1 at x1 and rho 2 at x2. We trace these values back to their initial line. Since these are straight characteristics, then the value x1 will go all the way to initial value y1, which is x1 minus t times the local speed, and likewise for the second particle. And now you make a statement that the entropy solution is such that these characteristics should never intersect, namely that the delta y over delta x should be positive. You arrange the relation between delta y and delta x, and you conclude that the delta a over delta x is bounded from above by 1 over t. Since we assume that the speed is monotonically increasing, this implies that modulo a factor, fixed factor alpha, the derivative of rho is bounded by above. At least the positive part of the derivative is bounded from above, and this is uniform bound independent of anything. Even if you start with bounded data, immediately you conclude that your solution has at least a derivative bounded from above. This is not surprising. It's a prototype case. Let's take the Berger's equation. In this case, the velocity is simply the solution. And one can show that if the support is finite and if the initial data is bounded, just from the fact that we can bound the derivative from above, and hence we can bound the integral from above, it follows that we can bound the total variation of the solution. In fact, the total variation, as we know, decay, even if we start with bounded data. So starting with very rough initial data, we immediately get regularizing effect. Notice that this is not the linear estimate in the sense that this is independent of any amplitude of the initial data. What this shows, actually, is a range of circle of ideas, namely that in the nonlinear case, we have irreversibility because we do not remember anything from the initial data. There is loss of information. These are issues which are intimately related to the issue of nonlinearity. In this case, it's convexity, and oscillations are immediately killed. Okay, we'd like to move to the multidimensional case, and there is a problem here. Formally, if you take the multidimensional case, now A is a multidimensional vector, then if you differentiate and look at the divergence of the velocity field, formally you get a Riccati's equation, which should imply that we can bound from above the divergence of the velocity field, but this is only formal, and there is no justification to this kind of manipulation. In particular, there is no time. But let me just tell you, if you take the two-dimensional Berger's equation, for example, this is a very favorable example in many numerical simulations. This is a canonical example where compactness fails because if you take any function which is a function of x minus one, x1 minus x2, it's a steady solution for which oscillations persist. So this means that the two-dimensional Berger's equation is not linear, and we are seeking a notion of non-linearity which will translate to gain of compactness and loss of oscillations. Talking about multidimensional conservation laws, we are talking about entropy solutions, and the notion of entropy solutions is devised by the small viscosity limit, which I will skip the details here. So we have an entropy. Here it is. This is the Kurshkov entropies, and we have entropy fluxes. They depend on the solution, and they depend on an extra constant V. Actually, it should be C, but it's V for this context of kinetic formulation. And it is well known that within this Kurshkov framework, we have the general framework for uniqueness and L1 stability. Let's talk about this. The usual notion of Kurshkov tells us that actually the time derivative of the entropy and the entropy flux is basically a negative distribution, hence a measure. You notice that I've added here two constants, V and then the signum of VAV. A is the flux, which adds nothing. However, they are very important for me because in a second I'm going to differentiate these two expressions with respect to V. If I differentiate with respect to V, a miracle happens, and the same expression that we have here appears also here, modulo a pre-product with the speed. Let's call this quantity inside the parentheses some function. Well, actually, this function is nothing but a pseudo-Maxwellian, which is given here, and it turns out that this pseudo-Maxwellian, which depends on our solution and the extra parameter V, called velocity by analogy, satisfy a transport equation, which is written here, of the type we've just heard in the previous lecture. So here's your kinetic formulation for a general multidimensional conservation law. And you do notice that there is a relation between the microscopic moment and macroscopic scale, because if we integrate this pseudo-Maxwellian, then we recover the original function rho. In fact, the following rule is true. If you take any moment of this pseudo-Maxwellian, you get the primitive of this little lambda. So this is a complete analogy of the kinetic versus the macroscopic formulation. And here's your kinetic formulation for general system of general scalar conservation laws. There are many other relations, and I lack the time to discuss them, relations with Tatar's age measure and so forth. I would like to mention that one can have a constructive approach, and this is a joint work with Pertam. There are many other names which are connected to that, in particular a couple of the gentlemen sitting in the audience. And this is a BJK approach to this system of conservation laws, where what you see here is a BJK-like term, and it turns out that this BJK term can be written also as the V derivative of some measure, and therefore we go back to this kind of formulation where we have the pseudo-Maxwellian being transported, and on the right-hand side we have a constraint, essentially, which is the V derivative of a measure. How is this related to the regularizing effect in nonlinear conservation laws? This brings me to the discussion, to the main issue of this lecture, which is the velocity averaging lemma. The velocity averaging lemma, I fully agree, is really a fantastic tool. The problem is it's also that it's a very complicated tool. I will try to simplify it. Here's the averaging lemma as I see it. So we have a microscopic density F depending on T, X, and V. To simplify life, let's agree that T is just X naught, and therefore we're looking at the transport equation of this form, AV dot grad XF equals to the right-hand side, and the right-hand side is just a nice term. Basically, what we want to say here is this. Even though we know that from the linear hyperbolicity, F is as smooth as the right-hand side and no more, by averaging on the microscopic scale, we gain regularity in the macroscopic scale. So this is the main message. So how do we do it? If you denote by S the symbol associated with this transport equation, you of course notice that F hat is the right-hand side divided by the symbol. The problem is that in hyperbolic problem, the symbol vanishes. If it would not vanish, it would be elliptic and then will gain regularity. This is true, but it turns out that this symbol, depending on V, for most of the Vs, it is elliptic. It is non-zero. So we can divide by the symbol and gain by actually assuming that this symbol, which needs to be vanished, it is not close to zero too often. Now, one has to quantify what does it mean too often. So let's do it. You take the average of F, which is just written here, and then you decompose this term into two pieces. One piece is the bad piece, and one thing is the good piece. What is the difference between the bad and the good? Phi is a function which is supported near the origin. And what happens here, the bad part is exactly when I know that S is close to zero. So when S is close to zero, there is nothing I can do. I just have to look at F, and I look at this term, and I hope that this bad term will be small, simply because the area or the region where this symbol is small is very small by itself. We will make this assumption. The other part, which is the good part, as you can see, I divide by the symbol, and then I will gain one derivative. So there is certain decomposition that is going on here, and the key technical issue is that Fourier multipliers are independent by the dilation parameter. I do not have enough time to get into the details, but this is absolutely the essential point. It's about Fourier multipliers. And now we have to assume nonlinearity. This is the main assumption that we make. So we look at our symbol. S stands for our symbol, and we assume that the measure of the set Vs, where the symbol is too small, is not too large. Namely, it is less than some power of delta for all unit wave numbers. If this is the case, then we will conclude, as you can see from here, that this term, in fact, is small. Even though we do not divide by the symbol, this term is small simply because we integrate on V. In fact, you have to trust me that if you integrate on V and make this nonlinear assumption, what you get here is an extra factor, which is some power of delta, and this power of delta, which is scaled by alpha, comes from this nonlinear assumption. So the assumption here is sort of ellipticity assumption, that the symbol does not vanish too often. The good term is good indeed, and it's also proportional to some power of delta, and we conclude that under this nonlinearity assumption, if we look at this transport equation, then that the average is more regular than the data. So the data, F and G, has some LP regularity, and the average has some fractional derivative of order theta, which I will denote gain of regularity, and the precise details of data really require a lot of work, and they change under different assumptions, and there are many works that we will not be able to mention in this short lecture. But just to give you an indication, as I'm averaging over the kinetic variable, I'm gaining regularity on the macroscopic variables due to the fact that the symbol is nonlinear in this sense. Yes. I do not exclude that. Yeah, I mean, what I said is not orthogonal to that, but this is not precisely the usual dispersion that we are familiar in the sense that there is more room in space for things to propagate. It's more due to the fact. Okay. Since you mentioned dispersion, let me go to the dissipative equation where there is no dispersion. I mean, I would like to see it. I mean, it's very technical, so I'm trying in 30 minutes to pump inside the details of the velocity averaging, and in particular the new part will be for second order equation, for elliptic equation. Do you have dispersion in elliptic equation? We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. There are many extensions. For example, when the right-hand side have more derivatives, basically I will divide in a very rough terms the general approaches for this into L2 approach, and this is the kind of result that were mentioned before, and they go back to the original from the original works of Gauss, Bertram, Lyon, Sentis, and the most general result in this direction that I know of are due to Patrick Gerard. And then the LP approach, which is much more, it's completely different, by the way. The LP approach, which initiated by Dipenna, Lyons, Meyer, and that we used in our paper on kinetic formulation for conservation laws, is completely different. And this is the approach which enables to treat different kind of integrability conditions for F and G. And the bottom condition is, in the context of conservation laws, what do we have in conservation laws? We have a transport equation. This pseudo-Maxwellian is being transported, and on the right-hand side we have the derivative of a measure. So we have to use the L2 regularity of F, the L1 regularity of the term on the right-hand side, and the conclusion is that under a nonlinearity assumption, we gain fractional derivative for our solution. So here's the statement for nonlinear conservation law. If we have this kind of non-linearity, then the solution at a given time gains regularity of order alpha over alpha plus 4. There is some bootstrap argument, and we can increase it to regularity of order alpha over alpha plus 2. Few comments. So here are a few examples where we, for non-linear equations and the kind of non-linear regularity that you are getting, in these cases, I should mention that these results are not optimal because in the case that alpha equal to 1, we do not recover the optimal BV regularity. And partly, this is probably due to the fact that all these averaging lemmas, as much as I'm aware, are independent of the dimension, with the exception of recent results of Jabin, Pertam, and others. And again, I cannot put a list of everyone working on that. But here is a good example. If you take the 2D Burgers equation and you look at the linearized symbol which is given here, you immediately see that whenever psi 1 plus psi 2 equal to 0, then the set, the kernel of this symbol actually is large, and this is exactly testifies to the fact that there is propagation of oscillations in this two-dimensional Burgers equation. Let me move to a second extension of the averaging lemma. This is joint work with Terry Tao. Now we're talking about the general differential operators of degree K. Now we have to make one more assumption, and the assumption is what we call the truncation property, which I sort of indicated before. We assume that if we take this symbol associated with the differential equation divided by delta, it's an LP multiplier independent of delta. It's a technical assumption, but it is absolutely essential. In some sense, this is the engine of the averaging lemma. We have to assume this nonlinearity condition just as before, namely that the symbol does not vanish too often. This is the quantitative statement. And under this condition, for arbitrary differential operator of any degree, which I assume in this context to be homogeneous, we conclude that the averages of F are more smooth than F and G by themselves. And as you can see, the smoothness has to do with theta, some fractional number, and K, which is the order of the differential equation. For first-order operators, we recover the usual regularity that we had before. For second-degree operators, we recover twice the regularity that we had before, and in fact, we can improve it a little bit. There is a lot of details behind these statements, and I have to go a little bit sort of to approximate the statement. Here is an example for the nonlinear parabolic equations that I have in mind. So it's a general convective diffusive equation. I do assume that these dissipative terms are possibly degenerate. So here is an example for the porous media, for example. If you take psi rho to be rho to the power m, we look at the linearized symbol. If the linearized symbol does not vanish too often, then you get compactness. And we can quantify this compactness simply because we have a kinetic formulation. The kinetic formulation in this case, which actually traced back to the work with Lyons and Pertam, is very simple. You just look at the linearized equation. This is the kinetic formulation. And under this nonlinearity, you conclude that the approximate solutions are compact in L1. There is no issue of uniqueness, which is treated by this set of gentlemen. We do not address the issue of uniqueness at all. In the case of porous media, for instance, even in the case of porous media, we gain new regularity results, which says that the solution stays in this kind of Sobolev regularity, depending on the order m, in L1. But in some sense, for the porous media, this statement is not that interesting. What I do understand is that in this case of degenerate parabolic equations, the case of isotropic regularization are treated by many authors, and again, I cannot mention all of them, but there is no treatment in the literature for non-isotropic cases. That is, if the BIJs are away from being just diagonal matrix, and all these cases are covered by this statement. In fact, let me jump to a very specific case when there is no time, there is no convection, there is just nonlinear elliptic equation. So here is your second-order nonlinear elliptic equation, and I do assume, of course, if you have uniform ellipticity, that's a different department. Let's assume that the ellipticity now is degenerate, namely the matrix B is positive, non-negative, but not necessarily positive. And on the right-hand side, we have a source term which satisfies this constraint. What is the notion of an entropy solution? Well, there are many notions of solutions, so let me introduce the notion of an entropy solution. Now, it's just a renormalized solution. I will pre-multiply by eta prime, and I will integrate by part, and this will be my definition of an entropy solution, and if I want this to hold for all convex eta, just as in the case of conservation laws, I will end up with this kind of kinetic formulation. Namely, F should be the pseudo-Maxwellian of rho here. F should satisfy this kind of equation, and on the right-hand side, we have a Lagrange multiplier, which is the derivative of a measure. And by averaging this kind of an equation, we recover the solution. So here's your kinetic formulation for a second-order elliptic equation, and here's my non-degeneracy condition. Under this non-degeneracy condition, we can recover the specific regularity for this degenerate elliptic equation. And this has nothing to do with dispersion. It just has to do with the averaging lemma. There is also an issue of systems. Just to mention that there are joint work about systems, I feel that this is still not at the stage of the scalar case, simply because we are using the entropy functions, and we obtain, by using a family of entropy function, this kind of kinetic formulation. It's not a pure kinetic formulation because the velocity depends on the macroscopic variables, with the exception of one case, the case gamma equal to 3, as some of you know, which amounts to have a multivalued solution for Berger's equation and higher moments of that. So let me conclude with final notes. First of all, this framework applies to actually proof convergence on many issues. For example, here's a peculiar example, convergence on unstructured grids. If you have approximate solution on unstructured grids, even though you get L1 contractions, there is no BV bound, and therefore compactness can be derived not by the BV bound, but by this kinetic formulation, and these gentlemen are just two that use this framework. Compactness in the multi-D case, I should mention that the result that exists here can be derived for the multidimensional bicompensated compactness. So compensated compactness is closely related to the averaging lemma in the one-dimensional case. But the averaging lemma brings us further in the multidimensional case, and recently we were able to extend the compensated compactness for the two-dimensional framework. There is the issue of compactness in the context of convergence to steady state. The issue of elliptic equation, there is much more to be said in this direction. There is the issue, which is in some sense the most important, and I didn't tell you anything, where we have inhomogeneous symbols, that is mixed-type equations. And there's the issue of multivalued solutions, and another gentleman sitting here, of course, that dealt with the case gamma equal 3 in the isentropic equation. And I did my 30 minutes. Thank you.